Today's audio cast for Monday, October 9th, 2006 is sponsored by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. Mike Blakeney reporting for AvWeb's audio news service. 5 years later, the Department of Transportation is proposing to compensate general aviation businesses at five Washington area facilities for reductions in revenue directly resulting from the government's actions in the wake of 9/11. GA operators, suppliers, and service providers at Washington Reagan National Airport, College Park, Potomac Airfield, Washington Executive Hyde Field, and Washington South Capitol Street Heliport are eligible for the money, which was approved by Congress in 2005. There's a total of $17 million in the kitty, but the businesses will have to prove in auditable form they deserve every penny. The DOT did a study in 2004 of 16 businesses at the five facilities and decided that between them, the difference between what they would have made in that time span and what they actually made was $10,443,936. More than half of that was attributed to losses felt by Signature Flight Support at DCA. Congress apparently took that figure and added a cushion for surprises and came up with the $17 million, $5 million of which is allocated for Potomac, Hyde, and College Park facilities. The congressional allocation is a maximum figure. In other words, if the companies can only prove losses of $15 million, the remaining $2 million goes back into the Treasury. David Wartofsky, the enigmatic owner of Potomac Airfield, told AvWeb the money proposed should cover the justifiable losses of the businesses, but actually extracting it from the government could be an agonizing process. He said the bureaucrats charged with assessing and approving the claims may not have the skills and experience needed to accomplish the work, even though they're trying their best to do the right thing. You've got dentists coming in to do brain surgery with predictable results, he said. In a decidedly better position are those who've received the so-called gray box describing Cirrus's plans for what it calls the jet. Information inside revolves not around the engine, the design, or the performance, none of which were addressed in detail, but on a metal coaster. The centerpiece of the marketing package is a heavy cast metal drink coaster emblazoned with the Cirrus logo. There's also a letter from CEO Alan Klapmeyer and an initial position holding deposit form, which when accompanied by a check for $100,000 puts the recipient among the first in line to buy the jet. So when will we see Cirrus's the jet? The next big announcement will be at the National Business Aviation Association convention in Orlando next week when the engine maker will be unveiled. But Cirrus officials say there will not be a mock-up on display and they won't discuss how far along they are with construction of the proof of concept aircraft. However, the actual aircraft may be closer to completion than all of this marketing hype would suggest. A reader told AvWeb he was at the plant earlier this year when he saw a jet engine being wheeled into a closed-off area of the factory. No comment, say Cirrus officials we spoke to. Researchers at Purdue University say it's not necessarily a lack of capacity that's bogging down air transportation, it's the plodding pace of change. So they've developed a mathematical model that might help the FAA design a system that can respond quicker to changes, thereby maintaining or adding capacity without huge capital infusions. Daniel De Laurentiis, an assistant professor of aeronautics and astronautics, told Innovations Report that improving agility requires not so much that you build a brand new runway at every large airport. He stressed the need to be able to add capacity in a variety of other quicker ways, citing one of the problems in the current system as the time it takes to develop new capacity at a major airport. Simply stated, by the time the capacity is available, the demand has already changed. A more agile system would have a closer connection between the two timescales, De Laurentiis said. U.S. BizJet's pilots John Lepore and Jan Palladino are denying accusations they caused a collision with a Boeing 737 in which the airliner crashed and killed all 154 people on board, not 155 as reported earlier. The pilots have been openly accused of turning off their transponder so they could perform pilot tricks without detection by air traffic controllers. Ralph Michelli, a spokesman for XL Air, which owns the Legacy 600 involved, called the allegations untruthful, absurd, and insulting in an interview with a Brazilian website. Lepore and Palladino were quoted as saying they did not turn off the transponder and that they were flying at the proper altitude, assertions that have made Brazilian authorities furious, according to news reports out of Brazil. The family of a Canadian pilot killed when her Cessna Caravan crashed in downtown Winnipeg last year is claiming $25 million in damages from Cessna and Goodrich. The suit filed on behalf of the family of Nancy Chase Allen by the Nolan Law Group of Chicago alleges Cessna is misrepresenting the ability of the Caravan to safely fly in icing conditions. The law firm said in a news release that the Cessna Caravan is presently being marketed as a safe and secure aircraft for winter operations, a contention disputed by Nolan Law Group. Operation of the Caravan in icing conditions attracted attention and produced action from the FAA earlier this year. Avweb was unable to reach Cessna on the weekend, but the company does not normally comment on pending litigation. Paul Mohler finally has his Sky car for sale, but don't expect the skies and carports of the nation to fill up with them anytime soon. The brains behind what could be the longest-lived aircraft development program in history is selling the original prototype of the vehicle on eBay. We couldn't find a listing on Sunday, but he's expecting to get $4 million. The prototype has slipped the surly bonds on its own power in an unmanned tethered flight, but anyone hoping to use it for the morning commute is likely to be disappointed. Potential buyers are cautioned that this is a prototype model and considered an experimental aircraft. Senator Jim Inhofe says he knew there were problems with the rudder of an RV-8 he was flying as he approached Jones Riverside Airport in Tulsa on a flight from Duncan, Oklahoma last week. But sometimes it's not what you knew, but what you do with the information. The tail dragger ground looped and was substantially damaged, but Inhofe and his passenger, longtime aide Danny Finnerty, were unhurt. Inhofe told reporters he noticed problems with the rudder on takeoff from Duncan, but couldn't see what the problems were. He asked to land on the main runway at Tulsa rather than the one normally used by GA aircraft and prepared for the rough landing, according to an Associated Press report the FAA is investigating. The first 11 of 44 Diamond DA-20 C-1 two-seat trainers have been delivered to DOS Aviation in Pueblo, Colorado for use in a flight screening program for the U.S. Air Force. The program takes potential candidates for military flight training and ensures they have the right stuff to continue. These types of programs cut the failure rate in later training by half. DOS President Frank Hunter said the low acquisition, maintenance, and insurance costs for the Diamond made it the logical choice. Those candidates who move on from the screening program will get their first taste of military flight training in the same aircraft. Find all these stories and more online right now at avweb.com. Comments are encouraged as always. Audio news at avweb.com. This report was made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. Click on the AudioCast sponsors link to learn more. Look for Avweb's next AudioCast on Friday, October 13th. Mike Blakeney reporting. Thanks for listening to Avweb's Audio News.